is getting really irritating. This is getting ridiculous.
What's wrong, bro?
Somebody on the internet said something that shattered what I've always thought about reality, and as hard as I tried, my butt cheeks start to close that gap.
For real, bro? What'd they say? Did they say that yoga was created by Satan and everyone that does the downward facing dog toast blood to the goddess Isis?
No, that can't be it, Sean. It has to be that the earth is round, spiraling into oblivion. Because if there's a god, he could only have us trapped in an upside down fishbowl because only we matter and he's so limited he couldn't have created anything else but mankind.
It's getting tighter. And no, they didn't say that.
Then it had to be Project Bluebeam. Someone said everything we see is a hologram.
Definitely Bluebeam.
No, it's not that.
Oh, I know.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, Sean?
Homunculus.
They said that there's no such thing. And now I can't stop my butt cheeks from tightening up. They're still getting tighter. What do I do?
Do what we do, Juan.
What's that?
Have an open mind and don't get mad when someone else's ideology is different than yours.
It's that simple?
Yeah, it's that simple, Juan. Just let it go.
Oh, feels so much better. So I can think differently than someone and not get my butt cheeks tight?
Yeah, bro. And you'll find you will learn so much more by having an open mind.
Thanks, guys. And remember, open minds, open cheeks. Welcome back to another episode of the Shadow Band Syndicate. I'm one of your hosts, one of your beautiful hosts. How do I look, guys? I look good. Got the fresh cut. You know what I'm saying?
Fresh.
You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to look like Joel, bro. I'm trying to transcend that next dimension with the bald head. But I know he like does. Do you use a razor blade, bro? Like, how do you get your head so shiny, dog? Like, how do you do it?
I use a razor blade, yeah.
Nice. I'm going to do it one day. But welcome to another episode. Follow me on social media at the Juan Juan Podcast. And where can people find you two lovely homunculus?
Kill the Mockingbirds podcast on Instagram, Kill the Mockingbirds on Telegram, and Kill the Mockingbirds on all your platforms for podcasting consumption.
Nice. I like that. And today we're going to be talking about somebody who talked about the language of the birds, so I think it's relevant. And we're going to be talking about Folconelli, and I'd be interested to see what you guys were able to dig up on this enigmatic guy, because when I came across Folconelli, it was obviously doing research on the homunculus and Paracelsus, because there's a connection between last week's episode on Ascension, which got some butt cheeks tight. It did get some people tight on YouTube who were pronouncing some words wrong. There was some comments.
Mercabellus or the Mercabellus or something like that. They were
Mercabellium, hey. Yeah.
And for those cheeks, just so they know, we didn't say it wrong. We actually said it the Hebrew way of saying it. It is Merkaba.
That's but are you Hebrew, Joel? Are you Hebrew? Like
I'm not Hebrew, but I did actually look this up.
Canceled.
I know.
I'm not Hebrew, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night, so gonna say that.
So we got some butt cheeks tight. We also did get some cheeks tight on the reel that Joel posted, which I mean, people were just tearing us a new one, really. And I was having a bad day that day, so I usually don't care, which is fine, right? Because you're gonna, like, whatever ideology you have, somebody else is gonna have the opposite. And it's fine. We're in this space where we're putting our ideas out there, we're doing research. You're gonna get things wrong according to other people, and vice versa, right? So when somebody comes out and says something negative, it's okay. It's, I take it as constructive criticism. I take that energy and I transmute it and I use it for other things. But on whatever you posted, I was having a bad day because I got striked on YouTube, of course, by the lizard people. And I just wasn't feeling it that day. And those comments were kind of getting my cheeks tight a little bit. You know what I mean?
Hey, it was really funny though, Sean, because Juan hits me up and he was like, man, I'm about to rage. And he's like, man, is this, you guys see this a lot? I was like, bro, this is like minor. Like, we get it like rammed like 24/7. Like, people love coming at us. And for anybody that doesn't know what we were talking about, I took a clip from our last Shadowban Syndicate episode where we were talking about yoga being connected to the New Age and the occult. And people went off because I put that clip up there just to, you know, see what people would say. And, you know, you want to see some like constructive stuff said back, right? Like, oh, no, well, this is cool here. Or this is cool. No, it was straight up just people railing on us because one of the guys that Juan was talking about was a Catholic priest. And immediately it was like diddling boys and this whole thing. And that's where they went with it. And like, we're just talking about yoga. You guys went to a whole different level of stuff that we weren't even talking about. But we always encourage people to go listen to the podcast because you get the full context of what we're talking about. Like, when we post stuff, clearly we put stuff up there for you guys to go check out the episode. That's part of it. We want you to like let your brain like circulate a bit. What is he talking about there? But if you get mad, Sean and I and now Juan is used to it. So yeah, it's all good.
But I will say that the hashtags kind of led it to the Instagram yogi world. So that's also part of it. Like, we got a lot of the yoga people. Like, a lot of the people didn't even follow us. They were just like, what'd you say about yoga, bro? What'd you say, bro? Like, man, I'll downward up you right now, bro. And I'm like, damn, dog. Like, it's getting a little freaky up in here, man. Like, but those people make me laugh. I love it, man. Like, those are like the people that call us shills and all that kind of stuff. I love it. I'm just like,
another one.
You know what I'm saying? It's coming back and forth. It's part of the territory, though. Like, you know how it is in this day and age. It doesn't matter if you're talking about conspiracies or you're talking about sports. Anything you're talking about, you're going to get someone that goes, oh, really? Like, there's all those people, man. I love it, man. It's like the Springfield on The Simpsons, the town halls. You know what I mean? You're just rah, 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 rah in the South Park. Rah, 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 rah.
So we're going to have fun with this one today, hopefully. Nobody says anything negative about it, which I'm sure somebody will find something to complain about. But we're going to be talking about Folkinelli. And long story short, I'm going to save everybody an hour and a half of their lives. What do we know about Folkinelli? Absolutely nothing. So there's the episode. Tune in next month for the next one. No, I'm kidding. So the way I was introduced to this concept was through researching the homunculus and Paracelsus. Paracelsus, I was actually listening to Manly P. Hall. That's when I first heard it. And then diving into Paracelsus' work was when I saw another reference to it, because he's the one that they attribute this Paracelsian Theophrastian Messiah, and that's Elias Artista, which is their Rosicrucian Messiah. And he was talking about how this artist will come and he will liberate the world. He will transmute the actual world and the universe into a golden age. Now, this is from the 16th century, so some people will say, oh, he was talking about some linear alignment in the sky, et cetera, Saturn and Gatorade and conjunction with whatever, et cetera. All this mumbo jumbo astrology stuff that I don't know anything about. But that's what they attribute it to. But when I first heard Manly P. Hall talking about it, he talked about it, how it was. And for to put it in terms that you guys will know, is this ascended master type of being who, once you achieve the magnum opus, you're able to transcend dimensions. Because we're going to also be talking about one of my favorite subjects today, alchemy. And part of the magnum opus is being able to dissolve out of this reality into the next one. And to put it in terms that you guys don't understand, this ascended master once you're on the right track, well, kind of sort of, he is in the bowels of the universe and reality, and he will peek his head out through the cheeks of reality at times and open up and go, hey, Sean, you're doing a good job, brother. And then he'll peace back out, and he'll always be there. You don't know when he, whenever he's going to come out, but he'll always be there. So he's this interdimensional teacher, if you will, this, right, like Luke Skywalker in Star Wars when he is talking to people with his psychic projection. And you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys saw the new Star Wars, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
he's able to, like, whatever. He's able to, like, astrally project and talk to the girl somehow or another. Anyways, he's able to tap into the Force, same way this guy's able to tap into reality itself, right? So, yeah, your cheeks. And this Elias Artista guy is said to... From the way I understood it, was there's various ones. So during the centuries, there will be only a handful of alchemists that will achieve the magnum opus. Fulcanelli allegedly being one of these people that this is as recent as the 19th century. So the 20th century. This is as recent as the 20th century. And for those that think that alchemy goes back into ancient times, Renaissance era, no, this was the... People that were formed before the CIA came into play were looking for this guy, okay?
Literally 100 years ago. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, it's not that long ago.
No, it's not that long ago. That's why they call him the last alchemist. And I've got a whole bunch of notes here, but that's when I first came across this idea of the... Because in alchemy, there are a few things that you can do as far as working your way towards it. And what I love about it is that it's a philosophical, spiritual, and literal subject. And we can go any which way with this, but some people will say, oh, look, they're just talking in code, which that could also be it. But, you know, there's always that one Florida man that's going to try whatever it is that they're saying. They're going to try it in real life to see what happens, right? So right. Did you have anything else to add, Joel or Sean?
I got something real quick. As soon as you told me about this subject, this is all I heard. Unsolved mystery, man. I had no idea. But going into him, it's a good thing. They were talking about like 1926. So yeah. When I hear that, that's literally 100 years, less than 100 years. So to your point, I just wanted to emphasize that this is not that long ago. It's not some 15th century or like, you know, beginning of time. It's just still going on. And I'm sure a lot that just proves that a lot of this occultic alchemy stuff is still going on.
100%. Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of stuff that I was seeing, his biggest tie that I was seeing a lot of was Eugene Conseliet. That was his adept. And Eugene, from all accounts, there's different
French.
People that think different things about this. Some people think that he was Fulcanelli, that he was just creating Fulcanelli as almost like a pseudonym to cover what he was doing. Right. So that was one of the things they were talking about. I mean, they talk about Fulcanelli, you know, turned, lead into gold twice, but again, Conciliate was there when he did it. And that was kind of like the mirage, I think, in some ways. If you're just going from a base level, it could be that Eugene was just making up this character of Fulcanelli as his master as well. I'm not saying that's the case because I've got a bunch of other rabbit holes that could totally say that Fulcanelli was real too. But some people think that maybe that he was writing the books, the two books that were published, and then there was a third that never got published, that he was the one that actually wrote those and put those out. Because there was like a little secret society they had too. It was the Brothers of Heliopolis that they had. And again, there was Eugene as being kind of the forefront of this whole thing and Fulcanelli being in the shadows. Maybe. I don't know. I think it's at least a thought to think about that maybe he was using this this figurehead as an overarching character so he could do a lot of these things behind closed doors that maybe he wouldn't be able to do without that.
And to have a witness, right? Like you have an automatic witness if you make up a character and then you're the witness. That like is pretty convenient, but it kind of reminded me that I was kind of seeing the lead to gold thing. It reminded me of Bitcoin and Satoshi, right? Nobody knows who Satoshi is, and this mystery, and that kind of reminded me of the same alchemy. I know it's digital currency, but it just kind of, for some reason, I found like a correlation with that. This mystery person that could change, you know, lead into gold. So,
yeah,
it's still money magic, computer. Sean.
Yeah,
it's
still money magic. Yeah.
Yeah. And the link between last week's episode and this one is Elias Artista is linked to Elijah, and Elijah is linked to Enoch. And I know we talked about ascension and ascending in the chariot last episode. So there's that connection there that they link it to Elijah, and then Elijah is Enoch or Idris, whichever one that you want to pick. But there's that connection. Now, I wanted to start with there's different things you can do in alchemy. One of them being the elixir of life, one of them being the homunculus, one of them being the androgynous, the divine androgen. And there's different things that you can do. There's the philosopher's stone, right? And the elixir of life needs the philosopher's stone. And this is what they're always working for. And for those that don't believe that this is still going on, Jeff Bezos, there was an article that I pulled up not too long ago that it was talking about Jeff Bezos looking for the elixir of life. Jeff Bezos looking for elixir of life. So these are things that the elites know about. It's just under a different name, if you will. And let me pull it up here so people can see it. And of course, here we go. So we have first space, now immortality. Jeff Bezos reportedly invests in eternal life startup Altos Labs. So these dudes are just that. They're the modern alchemists of today. And as Manly P. Hall says, the alchemist replaces his cave with four walls and just a modern day laboratory. And he was talking about that in the 1920s, which I had a crazy idea. So I'm going to, because I have my own ideas of who Falconelli was and who he might have been. And I agree with you, Joel. I do believe that there is some hoax going on. So we have here the late 19th century. Falconelli is believed to have been born in France in the late 19th century, although the exact day and location and birth are unknown. So we're talking about, obviously, a pseudonym. The etymology of Falconelli means little volcano. And it makes you think, because it goes to the god Vulcan, all right, the god of blacksmithing. And it makes you wonder, because when you start to look into the occult, I start to see it in Hollywood. When you think of Agent Smith, how he's able to transcend this dimension and kind of pop up wherever Neo is, that takes on a whole new meaning. Like, oh, Agent Smith, like blacksmith, Vulcan. And Falconelli means little volcano. The alchemist needs the furnace, right? That's part of the process of alchemy in order to achieve the magnum opus. And Consigliere had the little paper, the little notebook that he kept in his pocket that supposedly had turned brown from all the heat of the furnace that he had gone from all those years of trying to achieve the magnum opus. And they also talked about how Paracelsus, he also had all his robes were burned up in the front because supposedly they were in front of this heat all the time, this furnace. So that's how I came across it. It was through Manly P. Hall, then through research of Paracelsus. And this is a modern mystery, because there are so many different characters at play. And whenever I come across something that has so many different players, I always get confused because of all the names. So I want to lay out who some of these people are. So you have, and it's Eugena. It's Eugene, that's the French equivalent. So Eugena, bro, all right? If you don't know how to say it, don't say it at all, okay? Shots fired! So for those in the comments, they're like, no, you guys are both saying it wrong. Well, tell us how to say it. But anyways, I'm just messing with you, but it's French, so it's Eugena or Eugena, whatever, who cares? So there's him, and then there's Julien Champagne, which is his counterpart, which I believe he was 20 years older than him. And Consigliere met Falconelli through a servant when he was about 16 years old. Now, him and Champagne had created a secret society, if you will, right? The Brothers of Heliopolis. Let me try and follow my timeline here. In 1925, but before this, in 1922, Folconelli was said to have achieved his magnum opus, and he disappeared out of this reality. He peaced out. In 1926, they published The Mystery of the Cathedrals, which that's his magnum opus. That's what he's known for. And for those that don't know about that book, I'm halfway through it. I haven't finished reading that book. But essentially what he gets into is, and I have a whole bunch of stuff here that I'm not even following my notes. Essentially, let me find it here. What he gets into is that on the cathedrals is the secret to the Philosopher's Stone. So it's hidden in plain sight. And this is what it was all about. Only the initiated know what to look for and where to look for. So what a better way than to hide something right in front of someone's eyes. And the reason for why somebody would do this is, remember, when you're talking about secret and occulted societies such as these of the alchemists, that only the power could only be in the hands of a few, it's going to die within that secret society because they're not initiating anybody else. So what a better way than to preserve it by putting it on these, what they called textbooks. These cathedrals were books in stone. The Greeks looked at their buildings as algorithms incarnated, right? They were mathematical algorithms, numbers incarnated. So right here.
No, and I want to jump on what you just said too about some of this alchemical language. Folconelli talks about the phonetic Kabbalah and how that it's more symphonic and homophonic in the sense of they're making sounds and almost musical type of words from their mouth. Now, when I was reading about this one, it actually made me think about, you know, we talk about things in media that they slide in to let us know what's going on in the world. And a matter of fact, I put Sean on this. I don't know if he started it yet. I'm really big into comic book audio podcasts. They're really well done. Marvel does some of them. DC just started doing them. Marvel's Wastelanders is really good. It takes place in a world where it's 30 years after basically the evil one. So all of your Avengers are dead for the most part. Most of the X-Men are dead. This is 30 years later. Dr. Doom, Red Skull, who's the other one? I can't remember. Anyway, it's three of them and they take over the U.S. Well, when this happens, Dr. Doom doesn't really take over. He actually gets all of his bones broken by the Hulk, and his assistant throws Dr. Doom into a like force field pit to trap him and takes over his persona to rule this middle part of the U.S. During this time, Doom learned this language from these monks, and he had learned it, but he had to reteach himself how to speak it. And it took him 30 years to reteach himself how to speak it to regain this alchemical power. Because if you know anything about Dr. Doom, he's like one of the top magicians in the world. He actually held the title, Dr. Strange's title for a while as well. And took out Thanos at one point.
Really?
Yeah. So Dr. Doom's crazy. He's ridiculous. But he reteaches himself this alchemical language. And I can't remember what he called it in the show. But when we were talking about this phonetic Kabbalah, and I was like, oh man, that's what he's doing right there. It's this language. Because he even speaks about how it's not actual words and consonants. And he starts doing it. And it's like this weird, like almost sounded like something guttural that didn't make any sense at all, but like he said, no, this was a language, and it was the essence of magic that people didn't understand. But yeah, man, it was so crazy. And I just tied those dots together. I'm like, man, they're always showing us in media. They're always showing us in just like the radio show I'm listening to. You know what I mean? They're telling you about alchemical languages and how important they are. And they're the fabric of magic.
Yeah, and it's the language of the birds, right? This is what he referred to, the green language. Mm. And it's where he relates it to Enoch and Adam and all these things. And we have here, I found the notes because my notes are everywhere. And the hardest part for people to know is when you're putting together a presentation, the hardest part is compiling and structuring all your information. And for those that really want to know more about this subject better than I could at least ever present it, I found a few different books that are phenomenal. My favorite one so far being The Morning of the Magicians, Secret Societies, Conspiracies, and Vanished Civilizations, which Jack Bergier, which is one of the ones that encountered Folconelli, was also part of that book when it was written. There is The Morning of the Magicians. You have the Philosopher, not that one, Folconelli in the Alchemical Revival, The Man Behind the Mystery of the Cathedrals. You have The Folconelli Phenomenon. I also found some stuff on academia in Spanish because a lot of people in Spain really dig it, and I can read Spanish, so I was able to read that. I'd go so to Folconelli, and then we have here the Folconelli Phenomenon, and there's another one. Obviously, The Mystery of the Cathedrals, and I haven't read The Dwelling of the Philosophers. I do have a copy of it, but that's the second book, and we have The Folconelli Phenomenon, The Story of the 20th Century Alchemist. A whole bunch of different good books on it. And also, I interviewed Jay Widener, and Jay Widener covers it in the Mysteries of the Great Cross of Hende. He talks a lot about Folconelli in that as well, because that cross, also Folconelli also talked about it. And I did interview him about that book on my show, episode something. I forgot what episode it is. But it goes on to here to say, it has long been believed that the Gothic cathedrals were secret texts, books of some hidden knowledge, that behind the gargoyles, etc., etc. And let's see here. It has long been believed that were secret textbooks. Behind the gargoyles and the glyphs, the rose windows and the flying buttresses, a mighty secret lay, all but openly displayed. And again, that wasn't a new concept. You have, who was it that had it on the, Nicholas Flamel on this. He was a philanthropist, and he was supposedly able to give to people because he had figured out how to create the Philosopher's Stone. Therefore, he could make unlimited amounts of gold. And on one of the cemeteries that he had helped build, he had put it on, supposedly, on the entrance of it, the secret of the Philosopher's Stone. But you're only going to be able to know what they're talking about if you're initiated. The same thing with the Mystery of the Cathedrals. You're able to read it, but there's something behind the reading that you need to decipher. So you need to be initiated or read it over and over again until you finally get, I don't know. But essentially, it's written in code. And the reason for the secrecy in alchemy, you ask Sean, right? Because I know Sean's is curious about this, is because back then, similar to how we're being hunted today on these social media platforms, right? I got pinged on YouTube. When you say certain words and together with one another, you get pinged by the algorithm. Well, back then, you were pinged by the church, and you were literally burned at the stake for saying certain things. If you were accused of being a witch, you'd be burned at the stake. If you were accused of being an alchemist, you were a threat to the crown, because only the crown could have unlimited amounts of gold. And it sounds very similar to today and the Federal Reserve, how they're able to quite literally make money out of thin air. So in order to combat that, the alchemists needed to learn cryptography. They were the first. They were the ones to come up with cryptography and to encrypt their language. So they would hide it behind symbolism, and they would use, again, symbols and this different language that only the initiated knew. And look at the Voynich manuscript. It hasn't been able to be. It hasn't been deciphered even till this day. I did an episode on the Copial cipher that was deciphered after 250 years because they used an AI algorithm that was finally able to crack the code, but it was written 250 years, and they still don't 100% have the entire coding because it was written by a secret society of optometrists with the light hand, right?
Yeah, but let me ask you this. how is this AI able to figure it out? So if you want to start going into how alchemy's changed now, it's different. At least what we see, right? They're using it in a different way. You know, you were just talking about Jeff Bezos, right? You were talking about they're merging it with technology now. Alchemy and technology is becoming one and the same. So what if this is some sort of alchemy that they're using with this AI technology to be able to decipher some of these old texts, some of these old hidden knowledges? You know, like you said, they couldn't decipher it for 250 years, but then they were able to do it with the AI, at least to a point.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. What's really going on with the AI? What's going on with the technology? You know, is it infiltrated with some sort of entities? Is it some sort of alchemy that's going on, or both? You know what I mean? Because it's so crazy, man. This whole subject. You were just talking about Jacques. Man, that guy, there's some wild stuff with him and Folconelli too, man, because it all ties in with atomic, like atomic bombs.
And nuclear power, yeah.
Super mad.
Oh, well, they're non-binary, so I think they prefer they, them, if you're going to be talking about.
But when you mentioned the Federal Reserve, that's funny that you mentioned them. You know, you're talking about them common now, and we were talking about Satoshi and Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Well, the Federal Reserve has now announced that they have their own new service, an instant payment transfer called FedNow service. So it's like this new age of alchemy, right? Like where 100%. Instead of like just like making lead into gold, you're doing it with algorithms and
who made touch. Who constructed a majority of the cathedrals? The Templars. And the mm-hmm. Templars were the ones that quite literally made the first banking system. You deposit here, you go over there with a little check, I think mm-hmm. is what they called it. You go over there to the other side, and they knew to debit that account and give that other person that much. And then they were the ones that were like, wait a minute, as long as everyone doesn't come and at the same time withdraw their money, we can start making money by lending other people money, the same money that's just going to be sitting there. So they had made the banking system. Now, if you want to go deeper in that conspiracy, the conspiracy is that Baphomet was one of the ones that was like, yo, do A plus B plus C alchemy and you're going to be rich. But you gotta give me your soul, bro. This, you know,
yeah, just no, a little thing.
You know what I'm saying? Just give me your soul. Do a blood pact, you know? Because
well, you're seeing that going right now with the whole Silicon Valley Bank, man. Right? Yeah. Like the reason why that people don't understand is they did a bank run. So 3 days before, they're like, "Hey, this bank's about to collapse." They wave that red flag and hurry, so everybody pulls their money out. I believe that kind of stuff is intentional, right? Because they're trying to get us into. At that time, just going to a regular bank, when you're talking about the Knights Templar and all them, they were just trying to get you into that system of control. Now it's changing because everything's digital. Everything's, you know, technology has caught up to the plans. So now they're trying to get you out of that bank and into that digital bank. So it's just the same thing, except now on a digital front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to go back with the whole the Jacques thing, because we're talking about technology and how alchemy is with technology now.
Yeah.
So Folconelli actually met with Jacques about a nuclear bomb, right? And he came to warn him, Andre Hellbronner. He wanted him to go tell Hellbronner basically not to do it. And I'm going to read this little piece from Folconelli. This was supposedly transcribed from Folconelli to...
That's my favorite quote. Can I read it? It's my favorite quote. This is the secret of alchemy. Is that the one that you're going to read?
No, it's not it, actually.
All right, never mind then.
Or maybe
you better not read. When it goes to "this is the secret of alchemy," that's my favorite quote. Let me read that.
Okay, I'll let you do that part of it. Now, what he was saying was, you're on the brink of success, as indeed are several others of our scientists today. Please allow me... Be very, very careful. I warn you, the liberation of nuclear power is easier than you think, and the radioactivity artificially produced can poison the atmosphere of our planet in a very short time, a few years. Moreover, atomic explosives can be produced from a few grains of metal powerful enough to destroy whole cities. I'm telling you this for a fact. The alchemists have known it for a very long time. I shall not attempt to prove to you what I'm now going to say, but I ask you to repeat it to Hellbronner. Certain geometrical arrangements of highly purified materials are enough to release atomic forces without having to recourse to either electricity or vacuum techniques. If you want to read The Secret of Alchemy now, you can, or I can do it.
So let me pull up here. The Chicago Pile 1, I believe, was the what he was talking about, essentially. That was later, and that was in 1937 that he met with him, and then in 1942 is when they came up with this. And Jack was actually the one. So this is the world's first artificial nuclear reactor on December 2nd, 1942. And the meeting with Bergier and Folconelli was in 1937, which was 5 years before this. So 38, 39, 40, 5 years before the first ever artificial nuclear reactor, and 8 years before the Manhattan the Trinity explosion, the test. So when he saw that, he's like, wait a minute, I got to tell the Americans. So he told the Americans, and then bada bing, bada boom, they're looking for him because they're like, yo, this dude's got some manuscript by Bacon that supposedly has this formula for this material that can obliterate cities with a bright light or something or other along those lines. And the quote that you're going to read, I have it somewhere here because that's way ahead over here. It's one of my favorite quotes because he essentially reveals the secret to alchemy. And I have to find it, bro. You can read it if you want.
The secret of alchemy is this. There is a way of manipulating matter and energy so as to produce what modern scientists call a force field. The field acts on the observer and puts him in a privileged position via the universe. From this position, he has access to the realities which are ordinarily hidden from us by time and space, matter and energy. This is what we call the great work. So here's the thing. I'm going to give the guys that say that nuclear bombs are fake a little bit of credence. And this is why I'm going to say that, because he basically breaks down to Jacques right here that you don't need much to blow up a planet. He's telling you this. He said it's been done before. He said it's been done many times. He's actually speaking to like old Earth. He's speaking to a time that was long in the past, which a lot of people think that there was some sort of nuclear fallout millions of years ago in some sort of battle, which I kind of lend credence to as well. But he's bringing this up. So what if like these bombs really aren't what they say they are? What if like nuclear technology exists, but it exists in a more alchemical sense, what he's talking about? Why else would they be trying to find Folconelli? And if you know anything about Jacques, he was also a spy. So like he did a lot of things. And he was huge into UFOs as well, man. He actually wrote a book about UFOs.
He was one of the greatest esoteric and occult authors ever after the fact. And it's probably because of this meeting that he went there.
Right.
Well, I think what a lot of it boils down to is, first, I will say that alchemy has been like, when you look it up, they basically say it's medieval science, right? That's how the disguise of it. And I do think that a lot of these people believe now, whether it's true or not true, I think that they believe it, right? That's why it really makes me think that all the elitists and all the occultists really are like,
it's still real to me, damn it.
It's real to them, but it doesn't mean that it really is real, right? So, and maybe if you go with the manifesting, and if I manifest and this happens, it's just so, And when you say the alchemical, I think that there is a lot that can be made with nuclear, right? Because that is chemicals. That is putting things together, compounds to create something that's more destructive. And when they said blowing up the planet, I think they mean more torching the Earth, because obviously the planet, if it's blown up, there's just fragments, right? Then we would be on another planet. That'd be a whole or dimension, and that'd be a whole other. Yeah. I was just saying, like,
let me add on here. So before that quote, there's more to that quote, because that's a whole long thing. So he says, you asked me to summarize for you in 4 minutes, 4,000 years of philosophy and the efforts of a lifetime. Furthermore, you asked me to translate into ordinary language concepts for which such language is not intended. All the same, I can tell you this much. You are aware that in the official science of today, the role of the observer becomes more and more important. Relatively, the principle of indeterminacy shows the extent to which the observer today intervenes in all these phenomena. And then he goes on, the secret of alchemy. But then the conversation continues, and he goes, but what about the Philosopher's Stone, the fabrication of gold? And he's asking Fulcanellius. He goes, these are only applications, particular cases. The essential thing is not the transmutation of metals, but that of the experimenter himself. It's an ancient secret that a few men rediscover once in a century. So, and then he goes on to say, and this is because Bergier supposedly had a photogenic memory, a photo, right? He could remember everything. So that's why we're taking this for what he's saying. And then he goes, and what becomes of them then? Bergier to Fulcanelli. And Fulcanelli says, I shall know perhaps one day. And then my friend was never to see this man again, the man who under the name of Fulcanelli has left an inedible trace. All that we know of him is that he survived the war and disappeared completely after the liberation. Every attempt to find him has failed. And yeah, this is from the Morning of the Magicians. They go hard because Bergier is one of the authors of the book. So they have like firsthand accounts of everything that happened, and they just go into crazy detail. And then they later on go to find, right, he's a spy. He goes on to later to find the uranium for atomic applications after he broke into some general's house, et cetera, et cetera. So then Bergier was the one that tipped off the, what's the name of the service? It's got a name here. Let me find it here. The people who came before the CIA, which is
SSA.
The Office of Strategic Services was looking for him because he was rumored to have had an old alchemical manuscript by Roger Bacon where, quote, an explosive can be made that can destroy an entire army or a city with a blinding flash. So that was in 1942 that they were looking for him. So it kind of serves, it kind of plays into if he was a real person or not, which we can get into that. But I have some other stuff here that I want to get into. So we talked about the secrecy of alchemy, why, you know, they were trying to escape being killed, essentially. It's an ancient and philosophical and spiritual tradition that originated in Egypt, spread through the, you know, the medieval ages and the Renaissance. And we're going to continue here. Did you have anything else to add, Joel or Sean?
Yeah, I want to talk about Jacques real quick because I found a really cool tie-in with Bob Lazar.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Go ahead.
So we talk about Jacques writing The Extraterrestrials in History. That was in 1970 when he wrote this book. So again, you always find this weird correlation between extraterrestrials, alchemy, magic, you know, entities that we can't explain. There's a lot of that going on. So it made me think about Element 115.
And there's also this book. I don't know if you saw this one by Jacques Bergier, Eternal. I can send you it. Eternal Man. It's the same guys that wrote the Morning of the Magicians, but they get into what you're talking about the evolution of man. And they also talk about aliens. I think it was in this one. No, it gets into some other crazy stuff. But yeah, I'm sorry.
So I started thinking about Bob Lazar, and he has been integral in pushing this reverse engineering of alien technology. You know, he came out, what was it, back in the 70s, and he did that interview, and he didn't have his real name, and then he came out later, and then now it's like a big deal. You know, Element 115, when he first brought it up, it wasn't even on the periodic table yet. It is now. Element 115 is on the periodic table. Also, he says that element 115 with protons leads to creating element 116, which is livermorium, which immediately decays and produces antimatter. So the antimatter creates a massive energy burst, which can be used for propulsion. So really, element 116 is what fuels these UFOs. It's what flies the UFOs. So element 115 combined with these protons, and they won't tell us what these protons are, but it actually helps the craft fly. So when, you know, and he showed that picture with that canister that supposedly had 115 in it, and he talked about it on that Netflix series. He didn't even show the picture on the Netflix series. He showed it later. but it made me think about alchemy. And everything with alchemy is about periodic tables. It's about breaking down, you know, down to the protons, all that. And it made me think that what if, and you know my thoughts on fallen angels and entities that are teaching us humans how to do things, what if that's tied into this Lazar thing and what was going on that base he was at, this teaching us how to alchemically create these chemicals that they already know about that fly their ships already anyway. So it just brought that into full context, because we're talking about Fulcanelli talking about nuclear power and how to create nuclear power. So it's all about powering stuff in a lot of ways. And it's about powering technology. We're moving to that age, right? You can see that shift where in the 1950s, 1960s, everything started moving. In 1940s, after Roswell, everything started moving into more of a technological age. So this alchemy's moved into technology. So it just made me think about 115 and how it, with protons, and they won't tell us what's happening to move it into 116, which they can't prove, but that's what they say that flies these ships.
Do you believe Lazar?
Here's my thing. I know a lot of people think he's a psyop, right? And I think there is some validity to why he's talking about what he's talking about, right? I don't know if what he's talking about is necessarily false either. Maybe it's layered, because I think there's always truth that they reveal with lies. I don't think he's definitely not telling us the whole thing. And I think it was completely manufactured that he came out when he did and what he's doing now. I don't think it's what he says that it is. I know some people think that he wasn't even at the base, but it's been proven he was. So
did he have a mentor while he was there? Do you know? Is that part of the story?
I don't think he talked about a mentor that I remember. Unless you remember part of that story. I don't know if he had a mentor or not.
I'm not familiar. Like, I've heard the story, but I'm not 100% familiar with it, right? Because I'm not real big into like alien graves and things of that nature. But the reason I'm saying that is because during this whole Fulcanelli phenomenon or debacle, whatever you want to call it, I always refer back to the movie Fight Club, where to him, the guy was real, right? Whoever plays, what is it, Brad Pitt? He was real to him the whole time. He was like a blood and bone person. He was helping him come out and be like, yo, you need to fight. You need to quit being a little bitch. Like, you know, do all these things and, right, establish Fight Club, like the secret society. Was like, what's the first rule? Well, that there is no Fight Club or whatever the rule was. And it makes you think of things such as,
first rule is don't talk about Fight Club.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Don't talk about Fight Club. And I completely spaced out what I was going to say next. But this idea that there's the signing of the, I think it was Declaration of Independence, one of the two, and how in that room nobody wanted to sign because they were afraid that if it failed, they would all die. Well, supposedly, and I think Ronald Reagan told the story a couple times, there was, and Manly P. Hall did as well, there was this shadow figure that came out of the shadows, similar to a Fulcanelli, to warn this guy, like, yo, don't mess around with the nuclear weapons. Well, this shadow figure come out of the woodwork and was like, yo, he was hyping people up, like, yo, you guys need to sign. And then it was like, we got to sign, yeah. So then they all start getting hyped up. Everybody signs. And then after the fact, I was like, yo, who was the hype man? I thought it was you. Nah, fam, I thought it was you. And then they're all going back and forth. It was like this man who they don't know how he got in there. Nobody knows who he was at the end. And now I'm starting to wonder if this whole alchemy thing and the aliens and entities on the other side, because, again, part of the Alliance Artista is he's interdimensional. He's in the bowels of reality and comes, you know, peeks his head to the cheeks of reality every now and again to tell you you're doing a good job. And it's just making me think, is he involved with whatever? Hey, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm getting at?
I've got one for you, though, on that, Juan. So when Bob Lazar talks about it, they said that he says that element 115 could also be the famed exotic matter that is needed to create traversable wormholes. And it was the subject of a leaked Defense Intelligence Reference document called Traversable Wormholes, Stargates, and Negative Energy.
All right, hear me out. Hold on, bro. Hold on. All right, hold on. Just pause for a second, bro. You're going too fast for me, bro. Hold on. So, because you're talking about wormholes and opening up the fabric of space and time. Now, there was, I forget which alchemist that supposedly had a dagger, because we're talking about elements, right? We're talking about forging things. We're literally talking about putting things together to make something else happen. Well, there is this I forgot which alchemist it was that had a, I want to say it was Flamel or somebody who had a dagger that could open space and time, right? They could cut open space and time with it because it's made out of the Philosopher's Stone. I'm thinking about the Philosopher's Stone right now, bro. Like this forbidden thing that they don't know how to make it, but somehow we got a little bit of that powder of projection, right? The red powder of projection that Edward Kelly had, that Bergier had, right? All these little, Consoliette had, that a little bit of it in order to transmute lead into gold. And so it's making me think that you ever wonder, because we touch on the Manhattan Project, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, was it not? The headquarter of the Manhattan Project? Or was that another project? Manhattan Project. Hold on, I'm going to tell you right now if I'm wrong or not. Boom. All right, Manhattan Project National Historic Park information is Oak Ridge, Tennessee. All right. Sean, we're going to go there, bro. We're going to fucking go there, bro. Okay? What if, because you know how they talk about how Dog Man like fucking goes through portals? What if his claws are made out of this fucking element that's able to, boom, open up space and time because it's using this weird element and part of the chimeric lore, right? You're mixing things together. Well, what is that? The alchemists were doing the same thing back then, right? They were mixing animals together to make other animals, right? To make these chimeras. That's the whole homunculus lore. There's different things that you can make through alchemy. Now, is it that, you know, back then to them, was it ethical or not? Well, we have Paracelsian monsters that were atrocities that would come out and they would, you know, I guess some of them would be released. I don't know, but I'm thinking of Dog Man right now because of the Manhattan Project. And what if that was like some sort of half alchemy, half nuclear power? I don't know, bro. It's wild.
What the hell? Oh my God. No way. Yeah.
Nice.
That was a good. I like that analogy. What I was thinking a lot when you guys are talking about technology and alchemy and all this, and in that time, it was the movement of the technocracy, right? Technocrats. A technocrat is where they wanted to control people by data. But at that time, the technology wasn't where it is today. So I believe a lot of that translates into this technocracy world that we're getting into by now that we have the internet, now that we could track people and see what they're buying, see what they're into. Like, I don't know if you guys heard, like, you know how Xbox had came out with that little, this is a while ago, they had that little two camera system. I forgot what it's called. And they could play games. You could play like the tennis Kinect on it.
Or something?
Yeah, the Kinect, right? Now, people didn't realize that Kinect, when it was like aimed at you, it was checking for everything in your house. What kind of books do you have? What kind of posters do you have? Because then they could resell things to you. And the technocrats
believe. Naked playing tennis? My balls are jiggling everywhere.
Yeah, they see you right there. They were like, got him.
The CIA agent on the other side.
Were your cheeks tight or were they loose?
They were loose at that time, bro.
Blowing in the wind.
Oh, shit.
But technocrats were very prevalent around this time. So to me, Flucanelli, I'm probably saying his name wrong, but I'll say it. Flucinelli, Flucerino over here. Like, that's why I kind of like feel like it's one of these folklores, lure, right?
So,
to get us in, sucked in so that we can believe what they believe. So they can, whether it's true or not, doesn't matter if we all believe it.
It's not a psyop. It's not a psyop, bro. Flucinelli was a real guy. So
he was real. He wrote books.
He was real. He was real to me. Is it real to me?
It's still real to me.
It's real. It's real to me. So, all right. Let's get into who he might have been because So a quick rundown. 1926, Folconelli was approximately 80 when it was published, the mystery of the cathedrals. And then after that, it was the Dwelling of the Philosophers, but he disappeared in 1922, right? Allegedly, he had achieved his magnum opus.
I thought it was 1926.
No, 1926, the Mystery of the Cathedrals was published.
Which was 19, after he went missing.
Which, yeah, he had already been missing. He was already peaced out. 1922, he was already peaced out. So let me go through my timeline real quick. So 1920s, he met.
I thought 1922, they said that was the first when they talked about when he trans.
Magnum opus.
Yeah,
1922, Folconelli said to have achieved his magnum opus and disappeared out of this reality. 1925, the Brothers of the Heliopolis is established. 1926, the Mystery of the Cathedrals is published. In 1932, Champagne dies, which is the artist of the Mystery of the Cathedrals. And Consalia is the guy who wrote the intros and compiled everything together. And we have 1937, Jack Bergiers meets Folconelli in his lab to tell him the secret to alchemy and nuclear power. 1940s, the outbreak of World War II. 1942, I mentioned the Chicago Pile 1 is invented, and Bergier tells the Americans all about his encounter with Folconelli. This triggers a search for him by the Office of Strategic Services, which was superseded by the CIA. In the 1950s, there was a couple of other encounters, 54, which is the one that I want to talk about, where Consalia is taken to the Pyrenees Mountains somewhere in Seville, Spain. And supposedly he had gotten this note, right? And he packs his bags and he goes over and he is met by this guy in a car. They get in it and they drive into the mountains and they're just weaving all this. They pull up to a castle. And in that castle, out comes Folconelli, which at this time...
He's like younger, right?
He's younger. He's supposed to have been at least... He was 80 in 1926. It was 30 years later. So he had to be at least 100 and something, but he appeared to be 50 years old. And he goes, the master carried his 80 years lightly or something.
He was androgynous too at that time.
So they go in to this castle, and in the courtyard, he calls it an alchemical enclave, this secret, alchemist paradise. And it's making me think of the Rosicrucians and the idea of the invisible college. And it's also making me think of Twineman's hidden hyperspace kingdoms, where the elites go to these hidden places that maybe it's metaphysical, maybe not. Like in the book Atlas Shrugged, I don't know if you guys have read that book, where there's this place in the mountains in Colorado that the elites disappear to that might be interdimensional, might not. So that's what it's making me think of. And there's a whole bunch of people there in 16th century attire, and this is in 1954. And he has a lab, right? He opens up this wall and he's like, hey, here, you have this lab. So Consalia is doing his thing in his lab, and one day he goes out to get a breath of fresh air, and he goes outside to the courtyard, and as he's sitting there, there's these women walking towards him, and as they're approaching him, one stops in front of him to greet him, and it's fucking Folconelli. It's Folconelli, and he's like, he wasn't a cross-dresser, like he was full-on, he was a woman. So, and that was one of the things of Folconelli that always was what? But part of alchemy, like how I mentioned earlier, the part of the homunculus, the magnum opus, the divine androgen, which is the unity of the male and female. And again, there's things in alchemy that are symbolic, which this could be symbolic, or it could also be a physical thing. Some writers have written about it being a physical transformation. And it's making me think because in alchemy, the alchemists would say, don't let there even be a fly in the room as you're doing your alchemical works. Well, in the movie, The Fly, what ends up happening to him? Where he's trying to what? To jump, right? To teleport from one end to the other. He ends up letting a fly in his...
And there's numerous movies that show stuff like that.
Yes.
And when you talk about Funkadelic, you're really it's reminding me of Funkadelic should have an 80s movie, Funkadelic, day off. You know what I mean? Like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It sounds like he's just having a little fun with it. Look, I got balloons as boobies. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Hey, I'm a woman.
It'd make a great Netflix movie because, I mean, they could throw in their transgender stuff in there. But
they could put all kinds of things in there. But I wanted to reach back real quick because now that I kind of typed some stuff up and I was talking about technocracy, this kind of leads more into kind of what you guys are talking about. So maybe it is a little bit more the alchemy and the occultic world is tied into most things because Smith, a California engineer, invented the word technocracy in 1919 to describe, and this is his quote, the rule of the people made effective through the agency of their servants, the scientists, and the engineers. And to me, the scientists is where it really stands out because alchemists are scientists, like in a different sense, but that is the same. Like Joel was saying earlier, they both go by the periodic table and the elements and what they're using to create things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about the projection, so the purification. And what a better picture because this is, I think, now, let's get controversial here, boys, because I think that
get tight.
Some cheeks are going to get tight. But here, check this out. What if... I mean, just put this out there. What if, right, these alchemists aren't dead. These alchemists are still alive. They've just changed names. Well, what if they're trying to quite literally transmute our reality in this world by pushing such things as the transgender
Absolutely.
Agenda? So
I totally agree
when,
with you.
When you have this divine androgen, right, Rebus, which is the unification of the female and the male together, that's what I believe because on Baphomet's forums, it says coagulate and dissolve. Well, I also think that's a hint to he's sitting supposedly on the Philosopher's Stone. This cubic stone is the Philosopher's Stone, allegedly. And by you coagulate and dissolve in and out of reality, I think that they're trying to quite actually with this whole hermaphrodite transgender agenda. I think that they're trying to plug that into the matrix, whatever that may be, and manifest it in real life, this divine androgen, which is part, again, of the magnum opus. And what do they want to do? They want to write the great reset. If that's not another alchemical change, the new world order. I know that triggers a lot of people, but that's all the same, essentially the same, the magnum opus, except with a different name. The Great Reset, the New World Order, it's all the same thing because it's
achieving. Listen, brother, when I go into the NWO, when I enter that ring. No, but I think you're absolutely right. I think it is something that is connecting it all because all these things, we talk about it, and that's like what me and Joel try to talk to about a lot. And I'm always going to give pushback on everything until I can kind of see it our way, right? Because we can only decipher things the way that we can perceive it. And it does make sense that these guys would like not only – transcend and transgender, right? Kind of like transcend, trans, like the whole same word goes into like how words have powerful meanings. But if I don't know if you guys ever gone down the
wall.
You know how I don't know if you guys ever been down the rabbit holes of like Nick Cage.
I've been
or
in some
Tom
holes,
Hanks.
Though.
Some Nick Cage holes. Oh hey. Boom, boom, no, but how they show them like, hey, this is a picture of this guy that looks like Nick Cage from the 1800s. Yes. Or name the actor.
Keanu Reeves. Yeah.
Keanu Reeves, another one, which is great on that inside job, man. They do a funny one about Keanu Reeves. But that could be possible, right? That could be very possible that these guys are still alive and they're rebranding themselves and they're forgotten, like, because they disappear for whatever reason, or they create these alter aliases, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're. This guy never was, didn't exist. He existed, but not that name, right? And you use these alter egos to put out some of your work, put out your publishings. So that way, a lot of people still do this to this day. They use stage names. It's the same concept.
Yeah.
They have a stage name and then they just go from there.
Well, check this out. Eliphas Levy, he was one of the first modern ceremonial magicians. Mm-hmm. And he was inspiration for the Hermetic Order. He literally talks about the great work and its significance when it comes to Baphomet and Androgen of Mendez, which is like a pan type of god. So
he's the one that drew this, the famous one, the main mm-hmm. Baphomet. He's the one that came up with it. Yeah,
right. So he actually breaks that down. The goat of Mendez, which is the androgen of Mendez, and these gods that he pushes are androgynous. are what we would talk about as transgender now. And I think more so than transgender, I think they want to move us to a sexless, a true androgynous being. I think that's ultimately what they're pushing. I think they want to say that we're going to actually transcend a sex. We'll be asexual at that point.
I agree. I totally agree with you on
and
that.
That ties into transhumanism as well. Yes. So I think that's what they want to do. And I think these alchemists, and just in my opinion, I think these alchemists are tied in with these beings, these fallen angels. I think they've talked to them. They've got this knowledge from them. And yes, they are doing these things. Mm-hmm. I think they are able to transverse. They crossed over. They've seen some other
transverse
things.
These cheeks.
They are transversing a lot of cheeks, man. Those guys like Aleister Crowley, man, they've been transversing all manner of cheeks that's possible.
Broken
goat
smokes
cheeks,
everywhere, man.
Cow cheeks, yeah. Alien cheeks, men, women, whatever, man. They're all
Bigfoot
about the
cheeks. Dog man cheeks. Like they've been up in it, man. They really get down though. I mean to each his own. Now I agree with you with the whole the trans thing. Like I do think they want to make asexual, but I think it's not just, in my opinion, all of this, whether it comes from the politicians, the elites, the alchemists, or the occultist people. I believe they want to take away creativity because I think the most dangerous thing is creativity. That's why they want everybody asexual drones that are just kind of like, hey, what do we do? Worker bees that just follow the queen and, hey, whatever we got to do, if we got to die for it. That is what I believe because I believe critical thinking and creativity go hand in hand. And if you've noticed in the past year, creativity has fallen off a lot. Like a lot of people just copy and paste, copy and paste. That's how they did it for the record industry and the movie industry for a long time. Yeah, there's original pieces here and there. But for most part, it's just these recreations of stuff we've already
done.
You see
it online, Sean. Even with posts, somebody will create a great post and then if somebody copies it, gives them no credit. And just copies
at
it,
all,
puts it out
no
as their
credit.
Own.
I'm not talking about me or anything.
but you do see that a lot.
Yes.
Where people just want the easy road to either success or notoriety or whatever. And here's the thing. That queen bee is going to feed them that. Yep. Hey, it's easy. All you got to do is just take what we give you. Become this androgynous being who just... You know, you'll get all the pleasure you need from us. Just do what we tell you to do. And that's what they want to sell you on.
TikTok's a perfect example. Mm. Look at like when a sound is big, right? A trending sound. Everybody jumps on it, right? You put it in your video no matter what because you know it's going to get you into the algorithm. And it's going to, like you said, it's going to give you those dopamine hits. And that, I think, is the training, right? They're training us so that we can get the dopamine hits at when they want us to. And we're controlled. You're seeing it time and time again. I've noticed, and I've been saying this for a while now, and it seems to be getting worse. Because if you notice, a lot of the younger generations, like I've talked to people and their kids, and they're just so focused on this gender or my sexuality at young ages, where you're like, why are you focused on that? They're not talking about their ambitions. They may have interest in things. I'm not saying that they don't have interest, but I think that's just like the first phases of it. They want us to like, oh, our interest is who we are is I am a non-binary, like asexual, like blah, 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 fill in the blanks. That's what they want our identity as instead of these creative like, hey, man, I'm going to create something. I'm more than that. I'm not sure what I am, but I'm going to keep looking and critically think about it. That shuts that down because now you're using the parroting messaging of the wokeness, but wokeness is just occultism. You know what I mean? Like if we're learning more and more that those words are just being used against us. I think Jordan Maxwell was one of the best at like really breaking down.
He was a Freemason.
That's right. Rest in peace. Hey, there's a man. Hey, Freemasons are people too, bro. You know what? Freemasons are people too. I'm sick and tired of everybody getting on the Freemasons when, hey, they were molesting kids like the Catholic priests. Just saying, man.
You're going to get us canceled, bro.
Listen, I know, I'm already canceled. They're like, he's a Mason, I knew it!
If there's any, you know, whatever happens between two consenting adults, hey, sure. More power to you. Whatever you want to put between your cheeks is your problem. But my issue is when they start to push it on the mainstream and they start to push it on kids and implement it in schools and doing all these different things like that right there to me, that's sickening to me. That's You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a whole nother level of, you know, it's, what, how do you say it? Depravity? Is it because people are depraved and
they're
sick? But
here's a thought, too. So you've got these elites, right, that want to disrupt how life should be by teaching kids certain things. I think there's a part of it. I don't think it's just evil intentions, man. I think that these elites, and I think these alchemists that have been around for a long time, I think they wholeheartedly believe this is how we get humanity to ascend. I think that's what they believe. I think they talk to these entities and they're like, this is what we have to do to get it to this point of humanity, to where humanity is going to now evolve past our physical shells. And I think that's part of why they do this.
So Jay Widener calls it in his book Homo Luminous, which is this light being, this androgynous light being that once, so part of the magnum opus is creating this light of when you transmute lead into gold. And that's only a byproduct, the gold, the lead turning into gold. The light that occurs during that reaction is supposed to transform your genetic structure entirely. And that's what makes you, that's what takes you to this next level. You know, to add some context to that. And I was going to say something else, but go ahead, Sean.
I think it's like the Thanos theory, right? The Thanos mindset. If you, what Joel's trying to say, I kind of agree with that, because when you watch the Avengers, Thanos, right? He's like, I got to wipe out half of the universe. Not that he wants to. He feels that that's the only way that everybody could survive. So I do agree that some of these alchemists and occultist people, they think that, hey, this is the only way we could survive if we don't ascend, right? So we have to do, I'm not saying all of them, it may be nefarious, but I kind of understand what Joel's point is that there's a lot of people that think it's only nefarious, but in their mind, they might be doing the best thing. And that's why I think of it's like the Thanos theory, right? Because he thinks that that's what he has to do to save people. He's like, I can't save all of you, but I could save half of you. I think it's the same concept.
Yeah. And to bring it back to Fulcanelli, because so in 1954, that thing happened, the divine androgen, after he saw him as a woman, right, on that whole tangent we went on because of the woman, the divine angel. Once he sees him, I forgot exactly what he tells him, but he kind of paraphrasing, like, you will know once you have achieved your work. You will go to, I believe he says, the south in order to find the chosen land or something or other, yeah, along those lines. Paraphrasing, of course. And so after that, he leaves that place and supposedly he says that he remembers it dreamlike. And you can actually find recordings of Consalia on YouTube. There's recordings, interviews of him. You can hear his voice and you can hear he was a real guy. He was a real person. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, they always go, okay, there was another book that was never published. What's up with this whole guy? In 1978, there was another guy who, I couldn't confirm it, supposedly claims to have met this master alchemist in Italy. And to him, it was Fulcanelli. But who was Fulcanelli? I have my own things, and I have this theory, and I don't know how crazy it is or not, but, and I might not mean anything to you guys because you guys don't really watch a lot of Manly P. Hall, but I think that he could have been Manly P. Hall, because now there were contemporaries, they were around the same time, right? Early Manly P. Hall was born late 19th century. You know, we got the early 20th century that he was really coming out. In 1928, he came out, or 1926, he came out with The Secret Teachings of All Ages. I could be getting my dates wrong. But around the late 1920s, he came out with The Secret Teachings. And he wrote that book, but he never talks about Fulcanelli in any of his writings. And Fulcanelli is probably one of the most influential alchemists. And Manly P. Hall was really into alchemy. He had a lot of different alchemical texts and plates and books and rare manuscripts. He had the first plate in The Secret Teachings of All Ages is the Count of Saint Germain, which is another immortal alchemist, another one of these enigmatic figures that survives 300 years in history, and we don't know how, and it's because of allegedly had found out.
Y'all talked about secret societies a lot too.
He did, yeah. But the I kind of saw, I was hinting at, because they said that Consalia couldn't have been him, because some people think it was him, but some people say that. I think that he could have made him up, and maybe he was an egregore or a projection of Consalia, because I think that once he started to talk about Folcanelli and he saw how big it was with the community and the people, and it gave him more legitimacy to be his only pupil. What? Wait, you were the pupil of Folcanelli? Yeah, absolutely. So I think he kind of kept it going. Now, the difference is his handwriting and his writing style weren't the same. Now, doesn't mean it's not him. Also, it would put him at, he would be too young to have come up with this work, right? I think that was Champagne. So we have Consalia. People think it was him. Is believed to have been Folcanelli. After he saw the prestige and effect the name Folcanelli had, he stuck with it and maybe kept it going. It gave him more legitimacy, but some say he was too young. He was in his early 20s when the Mystery of the Cathedrals was published, so he couldn't have written this magnum opus. But then I think about Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall was 20-something when The Secret Teachings of All Ages came out, and that was one of the greatest works of all time. So allegedly, to scholars, there's no way. But I disagree, because again, Manly P. Hall. The difference is in handwriting. And then we have Champagne, which is the artist of the Mystery of the Cathedrals. And he was Consalia's mentor. They had a 20-year difference in their ages. So Julien Champagne was a lot older than he was. And he was also another one of the ones that allegedly had met Folcanelli. Now, I think it could have been Champagne more than Consalia, because R.A. Schwaller, which was this Egyptologist, he had supposedly witnessed Folcanelli on his deathbed. He was rotting away, allegedly, because of the magnum opus and the working in the alchemical lab. Well, Champagne in 1932 died from, he had this absinthe addiction, I guess. He was drinking a lot of absinthe. That's like moonshine level.
Yeah, I drank alcohol before. It's pretty good.
And supposedly he died. What'd you say?
No, I've drank it a few times. It's pretty good, man. It's gonna get you a trip, man.
So they say that he had gangrene and his toes literally rotted off towards the end of his life. So we have this R.A. Schwaller guy talking about how he had met Folcanelli and he was on his deathbed and rotting away, but rotting away not from drinking absinthe, but from the magnum opus, from doing so many the things in the alchemical lab. Now, one of the things that when you first Google Folcanelli, the first picture you're gonna get is of this bearded guy, right? This guy right here.
Yeah,
that's Julien Champagne, right? That's the guy that we're talking about that would drink absinthe, and this is Eugena or Eugene. This is Consalia. Well,
can I get a little Joel Thomas on you real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, because I've been thinking about this a lot too. Like, well, what if Folcanelli was multiple people? Because Folcanelli is a entity, right? That has entered into numerous, and you're talking about what he's drinking.
Let's go, baby! That's what I'm talking about. No, oh, no, angels, baby, we're back.
No, seriously, like, hear me out. I know I chill with Joel a lot, but no, seriously, I always give him pushback, and he knows this. But when you think about it, right, a logical explanation for these multitudes of him living in these different time periods and different handwritings is because Folcanelli is an entity. Alcohol is
what,
spirits,
bro? What are
right?
you talking about, man?
Alcohol is spirits. So him drinking that absinthe, what's it called? Absinthe?
Absinthe, yeah.
Absinthe, yeah. That is also a hallucinogen, right? Because it's
is so it really?
Yeah, yeah. It's a hallucinogen. Like, it makes you hallucinate a little bit. Not like it's a lower end hallucinogen, depending
watch
on how
Euro
much you drink.
Trip. You remember
yeah,
that movie? When they get yeah, on the absinthe.
Man, we drank that and ate like what's it called? A couple
what
eights of shrooms
fuck,
and shit.
Bro, are you serious?
So, like, just imagine he's drinking that and he's opening up his meat bag, for a better term, with Joel, you know what I mean? His meat bag open, the bodysuit for another entity to come in, and then it's multitudes
of people.
Nephilim,
baby.
All right, listen.
For the
Nephilim,
baby.
Listen, guys. Listen.
I had to do it for you because they would have got mad. See, that. I'm saying it. This.
What you did that for me, Sean? God! Thanks, buddy. Shut up!
Listen.
That's
so,
brotherly love right there in the flesh. Y'all heard it.
You guys, ladies and gentlemen, you just witnessed a gay moment between Sean and Joel. So, listen, guys.
Oh, hell no.
I like that idea.
Baby, I'm trying to go to the next level.
I'm just saying it makes sense, though. Seriously, it's logic. It's logical.
That's part that we could take that. Now, let me wrap up on this because Schwaller also talked about showing Falconelli a manuscript on the mystery of the cathedrals, allegedly, right? And that he had taken a few days to give it back to him. Let me follow my notes here. And let me pull up the article here that I have on it because he drew that picture when they met. That portrait of Julian Champagne, the one that I'm sorry, it was this one right here. This is the sketch that Schwaller did in, I believe that's 1930. And so, and this is another one. This is a self-portrait. And there he is in 1927 in his lab. Now, one of the things that, and he was a great artist. I mean, look at that. That was one of his more famous paintings. And the Lesseps, which was I guess a royal family at the time, their kids wanted to study with them because they were taking on students. And so
some people think that Falconelli came from the royal family.
Yes, that's also another there's so many fucking rabbit holes with this guy. So Schwaller explained to Andre Vollmer the circumstance surrounding his first meet with Falconelli and why he decided to work with him. I came in touch with the man quite naturally. We were frequently at the same cafe, etc. I never took a liking to Falconelli, but he was the only one in Paris I could talk to about the alchemical work. He had a few disciples of sorts, a fellow named Bocha. I remember Eugene Cancellia, of course, who never left his side. Now, Eugene, who also never left his side. Well, Champagne and Eugene were married, you know, were joined at the hip, if you will, divine androgen style. They were both joined at the hip. He knew what he was doing from a practical point of view. And also, Champagne was practicing alchemy since he was 16 years old. So he was well-versed in the alchemical arts, okay? Now, he knew what he was doing from a practical point of view. He was about 10 years older than I and rather well-connected in the publishing world, or so he told me. But there were aspects he did not understand, theoretical aspects, what I call doctrine. He made a technique of proper gesture needed in the work instead of leaving it, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently, Eugene, after the fact, didn't think Eugene didn't think that Champagne was well-versed in the minor opus, the lesser work, which is about purifying your soul and all this other bullshit, right, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes on to talk about, I showed him, Falconelli, the documentation I had gathered of cathedral symbolism. He got very excited and assured me he would give me a hand in publishing it. I was at the time thinking about moving away from Paris. The whole social affair was taking too much time, but had been working on a book with detailed proof through the structural elements of the cathedrals and through the sculpture and ornaments that they were a Christian expression of the Hermetic work, right? I did not talk to him about all the material I had gathered concerning the symbolism of the cathedrals. At the time, I intended to publish something on the subject, and he made me believe he could help me. He had connections. He really was most interested when I showed him the manuscript, and asked to borrow it for a few days to look at it more closely in view of presenting it to the publisher. It took me a long time to get the manuscript back, and when he did return it, his opinion was that this material should not get published, that it revealed too much, and publication was bound to lead me to adverse consequences. Mind you, this is Champagne that he's talking about. A regular confidence man he was, that one, but I admit, I had thoughts in that direction myself, and he merely confirmed them. While I had other things on my mind, and I was at the time preparing to move up to Switzerland, and that was an enormous undertaking. We left shortly thereafter, and I gave no further thought to the matter. I didn't stay in touch with the Paris people. Wanted to get away from all the social involvement. Then in 1926, I find out about the publication of Le Mystère, the Cathedrals. It was completely based on my work. Now, this guy could just be a hater too, right? Schwaller, the books, right? He could be a hater that maybe he was hating on Falconelli. But the one part that really fucked me up was when he's talking about the death. He went already sick when he came to me last time, limping someone and complaining of circulatory problems. And he persisted in the insane desire to come forth with whatever he had thought he had understood. So he talks about how he was rotting away. He was turning black. Now, the one piece of like thing that sealed it for me that I think is Champagne, and I think that him and Consolia were both in on it together, was when John Schmidt, the publisher, him, Consolia, and Champagne go to him together to present to him the book that they're going to publish. And the guy, Jean, is noticing, like, this guy's talking about the alchemical work and symbolism, et cetera, et cetera. It's Champagne that he's looking at with the mustache. And when they leave, he reads the manuscript and he sees those same ideas being conveyed, because Champagne's and Falconelli's writing is not the exact same, but they're close. He sees the ideas that the guy was talking to him about. And when they come back to sign some shit that they needed to sign in order to publish the book, Consolia is calling Champagne his master. And yes, my master. Yes, master. He's like giving him the utmost praise in front of this guy. So Jean is like, yo, I thought Falconelli was this dude this whole time and just didn't want to publish it under his real name. But then scholars say, no, he was too much of a trickster. He was, you know, he couldn't have published this magnum opus. What if, again, he could have been being demonically possessed by this thing, because Consolia after the fact was saying that neither him nor Champagne were Falconelli, that none of the two were Falconelli. So either they had a falling out and he was like, yo, fuck that guy, I'm not going to say that he was Falconelli and give him all the credit, and we're just going to leave it in the air because he's dead now,
right?
Or again, I don't know what could have happened. I do think it was Champagne, and I think that they were on it like some Pretty Little Liars type of thing.
You got it perfect earlier, Fight Club, like the Tyler Durden, you know what I mean? Like with the Brad Pitt's character and Edward Norton's character.
He's real, right? He's real to them. Like, he's like, yo.
Yeah, he is Tyler to certain people.
Like Bates Motel. He's
the Edward Norton character to himself and a couple people. Like, it's this cross, which to me really gives off a entity feel, right? Like, it gives off some kind of like spiritual. And if you're into this alchemy, which is more than just the periodic table, which they do use, and I'm not saying that's not part of it, they're really into the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
And if you're conjuring up things to be rich, you're going to get something that's going to tell you how to get rich, but it's also going to, so it's going to need something back, and it's going to need you.
Those
and
cheeks, I think, baby.
That, yeah, give those cheeks up.
Hey, check this out. Go a little bit deeper, right? Get deeper in them cheeks. So the question was also asked, who was Falconelli's master? And some people think that his master was actually his wife. Now, if you start tying it into all these handlers in Hollywood, Will Smith, Jada Pinkett, you've got Ronald Reagan and his wife, who was super tied into the occult.
Biden's Jill.
You got Jill and you got Joe. I mean, you can go down the line of all of these women that were controllers. I mean, we're talking about Reagan, man. Do you know when Reagan got shot? Do you know that his wife was so freaked out that she got tied in with an astrologer? Do you know this astrologer mapped out his entire presidency for 7 years? 7 years. Do you know that his plane would leave when she said that it could leave? There were times when his plane would fly out at 2:22 in the a.m.
Bro, he was tight. You said Reagan, right?
Yeah.
He was tied with Manly P. Hall, too.
Exactly. So you can tie all of this in to this Falconelli thing because, again, it's something to do with these female handlers when it comes to these guys that have power or prestige in a certain arena.
And
it's something to it to think about. I mean, even if Falconelli's not real and he was something that was made up, maybe she's Falconelli. Maybe this woman behind the scenes was Falconelli. Maybe that's why they didn't ever show her and no one really ever saw her except for the few adepts, because she was a woman. Maybe that was part of it too.
And also, they had a secret society too, yes, right? They had a secret.
Oh, no. Hey, what circle. About what you just said when he came back? You just kind of threw me into head. When he came back, Folconelli was a woman. But if Folconelli was a woman the whole time, right? If Folconelli is like not Folconelli, you know what I'm saying? But that's who the actual master is. Mm-hmm. And then this champagne guy is taking all that information and publishing it and posing because that's the master. Maybe something like that would like too, you know?
What's the Perry guy that dresses up as a woman all the time? What's
Tyler
his name?
Perry.
Tyler Perry. That's some Tyler Perry shit. Or what is it? Big Mama's House? You guys remember seeing those movies too?
Nah, I didn't watch it. I've never actually watched a Tyler Perry movie.
So, you see Big Mama's House though with Martin Lawrence though, right?
Well, Big Mama's House, but I'm saying that not the, what's it called? The
Madea.
Yeah, no. Watch any of those, bro. This shit's whack.
Big Mama's House, I'll fuck with that, but I'm not going to fuck with the Madeas and shit like that.
So the verdict being that, yeah, it could have been the, because the first one to have the name Folconelli was the wife of, I forgot who it was, in her little notebook that they were part of the cafe. Let me find it here. I had it somewhere anyways, but yeah, the first appearance of the name Folconelli was from a woman. It was from a, let me pull it up here. So this is in Spanish, but the Folconelli pseudonym that we found for the first time in the documentation, private of Jean Emily, whatever this name is, wife of August Bartholdi. So the marriage was intimate with the family of Lesseps. So that would play into the him being part of the royal family. But this is the first time a note from Jean Emile, whatever her name is, over Folconelli in 1910 to 1912.
And for everybody that's listening and not watching this, this is all in Spanish. So just like watching Juan like translate it, just like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, so again, dude, great. I mean, the
people... I must know Spanish because I'm reading it fine.
You're drinking that absinthe, bro. He's like, yeah, I know what that says. Durante 15 años, champagne. Yeah, he's fucking reading Spanish for us. So yeah, I was reading Spanish for this. I was watching Spanish podcasts about this whole ordeal, and it was so vast, and I still don't know who the fuck this guy was. But my favorite part was that interdimensional castle, because it always seems that wizards and alchemists have a tower, have a castle. Mm-hmm. It's all about the castle that they're in. So again, you got Harry Potter with the castles going through the walls and the train station. I don't know, man. I think that the verdict so far, he could have been a real person. Right, he could have been this interdimensional alchemist. Number two, he could have been Consalia or Champagne. Number three, he could have been this entity that was possessing people. Right, because, and let me get your cheeks tight a little bit, Sean and Joel. Did you know that in the word altar, or the word bar in Sumerian means altar? And what do you do at a bar? You consume wine and spirits. So again, that phonetic Kabbalah, you know what I'm saying? Like all these words have meaning. There's a deeper meaning behind everything else, and that's why they lay everything out the way they do. So think about it next time you go to drink at a bar, you're at an altar in Sumerian terms, and you're drinking wine and spirits, and you're opening up yourself for demonic possession. So again,
well, in Sean Chris terms, it's just a place to chill. So
I never thought I'd be talking about Folconelli and aliens and dogmen all in the same episode.
That dogman part, where that I really, bro, I'm on that now, because when you said the philosopher's stone as the clause and interdimensional travel, that makes a lot of sense.
Listen, it's part of the homunculus storm. Part of the homunculus is it does what you need to do, and I think that these dogmen are like these meat suits that people jump into to have fun. Let's take it for a spin. And where did all this originate? We're talking about the Manhattan Project, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And what's going on in Oak Ridge?
Yep.
Some shady shit's going on in Oak Ridge, bro. Yeah, no, some weird stuff. And when I went up there, there was a sign that said, what was it? Gatlinburg, the gateway to the Smokies. And I was like, the gateway? You talking about a portal, bro? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what are you getting at? So I think something, and it's really dark.
I think I seen the same sign, but the sign to me did said something different. It said,
dumb ways to die. So many dumb ways to die.
Maybe we seen a different sign. I'm not sure.
Maybe we saw a different. I saw the one. I saw another one said, "Keep your butt cheeks tight," because Dogman's out here.
But you're right. It's a gateway, right? All that terminology is intentional. I really think you got something with this Dogman. I actually want to think about that a little bit more after the podcast. I like that idea because we've talked a lot about Dogman being interdimensional, and now you kind of connected how. Yep. He can be interdimensional, or it also, like you said, just a meat bag that you're wearing to do dirty deeds too, right? Well, to do things that you want to do.
Part of alchemy is the transference of consciousness too. They were able to like bottle up your consciousness and transmute it to something else. So again, it's all linked, bro. And I think, you know, a lot of people go, you talk about alchemy too much. Well, I think it's at the core of a lot of things. It just has a different name. You know, if you don't
call
it alchemy.
It's at the core of everything. And I completely agree with you on that. I don't know how people can't see that. Because if you're talking about the occult in any sense, it's alchemy is at the base of all of it. And you can't have one without the other. So I don't see how people can't understand that part of it. I just think people don't want to understand it. And I think that's a lot to do with it. I don't think that it's that they don't believe it. It's just too much. Like, and it is, because it's secrets behind secrets behind secrets behind secrets. Like you said, you're looking at a cathedral and there's all of these different secrets that tie together, but you have to be an initiate to understand what those symbols mean. And even if you understand those symbols, you still have to be able to put them together.
In the right order, right? To decipher it. Yeah, like to actually know what it means. It's to me, alchemy is underestimated because it's called science. So what people, I believe, is that they're taught, like if you Google what's the definition of alchemy or what is alchemy, the meaning of alchemy, they're going to just tell you, oh, it's a medieval science. You know what I mean? No. In the mid ages, that's what they kind of like. You said it doesn't say that?
No, I'm saying that, yeah, that people aren't going to understand it. Like they.
Yeah, they're not. Because they're going to look at it as, oh, it's just they didn't know at that time. You know, they were putting shit and blood on it because they thought like shit and blood together would be so good. Not knowing that it's actually spells and different ways of using elements around you to manipulate things.
To sum everything up in a nutshell, what you were saying, Joel, behold, said Boehm, and this was a philosopher, a German philosopher, he will show it to you plain enough. If you be a magus and worthy, else you shall remain blind still. So again, if you're that magus, if you're that initiate, you're going to see it. Otherwise, you shall remain blind still. So this is what they were all getting at with the mystery of the cathedrals. And again, the mystery of the cathedrals is a whole other episode. And the dwelling of the philosopher is a whole other episode. This is just Folcanelli, the entity or the man, or whatever you want to call it, and its story, right? He's they, them. He's probably non-binary.
Do you think when Folcanelli changed to a woman, they called him Fluzanelli, like a floozy, Fluzanelli? Hey, Fluzanelli, what's up?
I don't know.
Fluzanelli be getting everybody head around here.
Yeah, bro. I don't know. He'd be getting everybody's interdimensional.
They call her Jawbone.
So, got that strong crimson chin over here, bro. So that's what I got on Folcanelli. You guys got anything else? I think this is a hell of an episode. You got something else?
No, I said I that's what I had too.
No, I think you described it the best, where it's like really four options of the possibilities, like we haven't come to a conclusion because it's so difficult to actually come to a conclusion when you're forced to kind of take the word of a bunch of different people and then you're piecing it together. Plus, it was such a long time ago. We sound like we can interview a lot of these people, but I think you put I think the champagne thing does make a lot of sense. And I think if not, then it may be some kind of entity as well, like a combination. I think it's probably a combination of all four answers you said.
Remember,
I just think Sean and I's relationship got a lot stronger.
Just remember that we're taking the word of alchemists, and what were alchemists known for? Cryptography. So take that for what you will, because I've had people, you know, on the Jay Widener episode, he's an alchemist, they're like, he never says what he's talking about. I go, since when have you known any alchemist to be straight up and straightforward? Yeah. Like, that's their whole thing, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not going to be straight up because they're alchemists. You know what I'm saying? You got to earn it. You got to read the books and
Well, they don't get that Juan, me, and Joel would just... You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. It's true, man. Like, why would you believe a liar, though? That's like the people that are like, hey, he lies all the time, but this time he's telling the truth.
So I got a button for you, bro.
Homunculus confirmed. Eat a bag of dog dicks. Homunculus confirmed. Good God, that's a homunculus.
And this is my favorite one right here, right? Right, right.
Certified motherfucker homunculus.
Homunkadelic.
Oh, man.
That's
good. I like it. All right, all right.
You should have. The only thing I would add to that, instead, eat a bag of dogman dicks.
Well, listen, I'll tell you off air. But, yeah, anyways, let's plug our shit. Get the fuck out of here. Juan. TJOJP.com. I am working on a member site, so I did change the URL. TJOJP, the Juan Juan Podcast, abbreviated.com. Find all my links on there and follow me on Instagram at the Juan Juan Podcast.
Kill the Mockingbirds Podcast on Instagram. Kill the Mockingbirds on Telegram. Sean Chris, Joel Thomas on all your music streaming platforms, as well as you can find Kill the Mockingbirds on all platforms as well. You will see probably a link tree at this, you know, and if you feel the urge to donate, just
here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talks.
Here comes the money. Money.
You know what I'm saying? Let me just chill it up real quick for a second. You know, donate to Juan and Juan Podcast, Kill the Mockingbirds Podcast. Why not, bro? It's just $1 a day, bro. And then that keeps the homunculus alive. We're trying to keep the homunculus alive. We're trying to get Gensaki back, you know, save the gingers. And we're trying to feed all the homeless lizard people. It's a lot going on in here. We need your help. Your support goes a long way.
90 patrons, bro. We're almost to 100 patrons. So shout out to all you patrons supporting the show. And yeah, send us some money for this, because we had to read a lot of shit to get to this. But yeah, we'll catch you guys on the next one. Maybe the next one we'll talk about some fallen angel, Nephilim tech or something. We'll figure it out. So, as always,
don't get me like that before we go off air.
Smile and wave, boys. Smile and wave.
Bye.
Shadow Man Syndicate. Pucker up. This corporal transfer.